One of the more rockin' numbers on her recent album, Roses at the End of Time. I was going to say one of the catchier numbers on the album, but they're all catchy. It's a really terrific folk and pop and rock album from Eliza Gilkison. And again, we had wanted to have her on last week, couldn't quite get that to happen, but she is with us now, calling from the road, actually on her way to her gig in New York tonight. She's playing in Dobbs Ferry at South Presbyterian Church. And on that same bill, by the way, is Chris Smither, who's been in the neighborhood a couple of years ago, so he's also a friend of the show. Please welcome, it's only a week later, Eliza Gilkison. Hello, Eliza.
Hey, hi, Dave. Thanks for forgiving me for last week. That was just a big mess up.
Yeah, it was your computer. It sort of crashed for a moment, and then you lost your calendar and all sorts of... Don't apologize to me. Apologize to all the millions of fans who were waiting to hear you last week on my show. I mean, since we do a lot of stuff on the road, were you writing songs on the road and then they all came together, or was it a more compressed period of time that you put that record together?
It kind of came together quickly. It is hard to write when you're on the road. I find that I really do have to take some time off and kind of get into a different headset. But then my son actually produced the record, and he built us a home studio, and we recorded it in my house. And then in the end, we moved over to a big studio and mixed it and mastered it. But we did a lot of the recording in the house, and my son just did a terrific job of producing it. It was very interesting, sort of turning over the reins to your kid. But I had already worked with him on another project, the Red Horse Project, and he had done such a great job with my tracks. And he has such a good feel for how I, you know, getting me to do my best, you know. So it was great.
And if people are you know, or if you're saying that it might be a little unusual for the son to be producing his mother's album, let's not forget that you come from a pretty musical family yourself. Want to tell everybody about your dad?
Yeah, well, yes, my dad was a hit songwriter in the 50s and 60s, and he had a folk trio by the name of the Easy Riders, and they had a number of hit songs.
He also wrote the song Bare Necessities from The Jungle Book, which I think is way, way, way cool. But is it in your genes? I mean, did you know from being a kid, that music was going to be your life?
I did. I really did. I was passionate about it as soon as I could start playing and singing, and I loved the scene that my dad was involved with, of course, and I just loved the musician's life. I knew that's what I wanted, and there was also the fact that I really wasn't very good at anything else, so... You know, between those two things, I was pretty inspired to be a musician.
Yeah, I have to say, I was a little surprised when I went digging back and I saw that you released your first album back in 1969. I should have been more cognizant, but I had no idea.
Well, I don't know that it was ever fully released because I was on RCA. I was a teenager, and I don't think it ever got released. I think it was one of those things an executive at RCA brought in, and then he moved on and all his projects sort of fell apart. So it didn't. I don't think it ever actually quite got released.
If it didn't get released, that the music isn't out there, or maybe eventually it got bootlegged or something. But
really looking for something greater than myself, and an aspect of wanting to give back to community. I think that's always been in there. And along with a lot of very self-possessed songs about, you know, love and loss.
Okay, that's fair. But as you said, of giving back to the community, you are sometimes and on some level a politically active and oriented songwriter and performer. Do you think that's kind of par for the course for folk singer types?
I do think a lot of us are socially conscious. I think It's certainly not a required task to, you know, take on politics, but I think in general folk music does have a tendency to have its ear to the street and to what's going on in the community and what's going on in the world. I think those are things we like to write about and those are things we feel strongly about. So I think it does show up in the music. I think it can be overdone, so it's good to balance it with just, you know, good songwriting about the, you know, the just various things in life.
I mean, I think if people haven't necessarily heard some of your work or your music, your best known number had to do with the Asian tsunamis. It was called Requiem. But again, there's that line that a songwriter has to think about of, well, am I really inspired to write this? Or is it like, oh, do you run into that problem that Bob Dylan had of not wanting to just sit down and write finger-pointing songs because it's what's expected of you, and you get into a kind of a wormhole of doing that over and over?
Yes, I think there's something sort of, you know, no one wants to be preached at, and I think it's better to have your goal be to really make great art. You know, I've really thought about that a lot, and I think first and foremost, what I want to do is write a true song that is, you know, musical and lyrical and good poetry and really tapped into some a feeling. Now, if I'm feeling angry because of, you know, of a political reasons, then maybe I'll take on something, but I generally take it on from an artistic standpoint, because I want the song to sing, and I want to be able to, you know, really be able to get behind some good poetry when I sing the song.
Cool. Now here's something that I hope will not confuse listeners but your album Roses at the End of Time is on Red House Records. But you were also part of a band called Red Horse. Is that correct?
That's right. We did that to confuse others, to be funny, but we're the ones who are the most confused about it.
Okay. Well, what is Red? Tell everybody about Red Horse.
Red Horse is John Gorka and Lucy Kaplansky and me, and we decided to put a little band together because we ended up doing some shows together, and we had so much fun singing that it just... there was just such chemistry that we thought, well, you know, why not do some shows together? And then we thought, well, let's do a record. And it was all just based on friendship and kind of fun. But then it ended up being, you know, viable for us. And we started getting shows and got a great reaction to the record. So we're taking it more seriously. Well, I guess we've decided to continue because we're in the studio and we're making another record. So it's been a lot of fun.
Now, let me ask, though, is there a difference between an Eliza Gilkison song written for Red House versus an Eliza Gilkison song written for one of your solo albums?
Yes, I think with Red Horse, I'm thinking a lot more about what works for the group and what is the energy of the group. And for me, I really wouldn't want to bring my politics onto a Red Horse show because I wouldn't want to have... that, you know, represent, you know, I wouldn't want to speak for them.
Oh, sure, okay,
so
sure.
I just would rather, so in my shows, I think I'm more apt to go in many different directions and speak my mind about things or sing my heart about things. With Red Horse, I want to make sure it's something that they're going to feel good about performing and bringing out to the public. So is it a little bit more editing involved there?
Hmm. Okay. And do you collaborate? Do you co-write with them, or do each of you three write your own songs and bring them to the band?
What we've been doing is doing each other's songs, and that has been key. That the thing that made it very different was going back into each other's catalogs and really seeking songs that we could sort of inhabit for ourselves of each other's material. And that has been really fun, and it's kind of a different approach because you see a lot of singer-songwriters who do these, you know, these in the round things together. But this is really where we, you know, we really do each other's material, and it changes it a lot because you have to listen to each other's material in a different way, and we really change the arrangements around and try to make them their own, and that's been sort of our signature, and we will do that again in the next one.
Cool. By the way, everyone, we're talking to Eliza Gilkison. We have another couple of minutes with her before we have to go, and she has to go as well because she's doing that show tonight at the South Presbyterian Church in Dobbs Ferry, New York. Chris Smither also on the bill, which sounds like a pretty great combination right there. And by the way, again, Colorado listeners, in June, she will be at the Wright Opera House in Ouray, Colorado, and that will be with Red Horse. That'll be the trio there. I have no idea where Ouray, Colorado is, but...
where are you? What city are you in?
We're in Greeley, Colorado. We're in Northern Co.
Greeley.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Ouray is really between, you have to go directly north from Durango up over the pass. So it's kind of south of Grand Junction and, or of Carbondale? No, Grand Junction. And north of Durango. It's way deep in the mountains.
Oh, cool. Cool. Well, that'll be in June, and as I discussed off the air with Eliza, hopefully we'll be able to get her back on the show in June around the time of that show and spend a lot more time with her, because we kind of had to squeeze her in today with all the other stuff that we were doing. But I did want to get her on the air to push her show tonight and to make up for last week. So let me ask, first of all, I want to also give a couple of shout-outs to Eliza from people who found out she was going to be on the show and wanted to give a shout out to her. Do you happen to remember, going to put you on the spot here, a fellow named Murdoch McBride? He was publishing something called Songwriters Weekly about 25 years ago.
Remember Murdoch? Yeah. Where's he now?
Well, Murdoch, first of all, says she's a wonderful, talented lady. Murdoch is still writing. He's still doing journalism stuff. I think he also works in a funeral home, which is an interesting thing, because I used to know him when we were both working at Playbill. He was a journalist there for a couple of years, as was I. So hi from Murdoch McBride to Eliza Gilkison.
Back to Murdoch, then.
And also a shout-out from my friend Linda in California. She has a good friend named Rain Perry out in Ojai.
That's good. I love Rain. Rain's a very talented singer-songwriter.
So, you know, they just wanted to get those out there. Now here's a question for you, and I ask this of pretty much every musician who's been on. The two usual questions asked of musicians. Who were your influences, of course, but maybe some of the less obvious ones, and what's on your iPod these days? What are you listening to?
That's funny, because I don't have an iPod.
Oh, wow. So you carry, on the road, you take a turntable or something? Or you have an 8-track tape or something?
I'm so old-fashioned, I have a disc player in my computer. So I still, you know, spin them that way. But I have iTunes in my computer,
right,
too, but... So I am listening to, let's see, who have I got on there right now? Just listening to recently. It does put me on the spot. It's like my mind goes suddenly completely blank. Right now, well, I just put up some Carla Bonhoff, because I'm looking at some of her material as a possible cover for Red Horse. And mostly I've been researching songs for Red Horse, so I'm pretty deep into John Gorka and Lucy Kaplansky right now, because I'm trying to pick a few of their songs for the next record. So that's really what's on my mind right now.
Another fairly not a curveball question at all, but having been in the music business in one way or another since the very late 1960s, and especially during the whole sea change of big record companies and labels and a certain way that popular music was promoted and produced and gotten out there, and now the way it is, which do you prefer? How do you feel about the new way, the post-iTunes and Napster universe that we're in for musicians?
Well, I like it that it's not the usual power structure that it used to be. I think there's a lot more room for lateral movement, and people can come up from any direction and make something happen that doesn't have to go through the gatekeepers, the old gatekeepers. And I think that makes for a lot of new sound, and you don't have the same, and more women. And I mean, in the old days, it was like one female artist to every 20 or 30. Now I'd say it's not more women, it's at least even.
Cool. Well, when the women are making as nice and intelligent and hummable and lyrical music as Eliza Gilkison is, well, you know, who can complain? I think that's a wonderful thing. So, I want to thank you, Eliza, for calling in and for being in the neighborhood. And I want to tell everybody again, tonight at South Presbyterian Church in Dobbs Ferry, New York, with Chris Smither also on the bill, see Eliza Gilkison. That is this. Do you know what time? Is it 7:30, 8 o'clock? Any idea?
8 o'clock. I'm on at 7:30 tonight
in Dobbs Ferry. Please go see her. And, of course, if you're in Colorado, we'll let you know in June that she's going to be at in Ouray at the Wright Opera House with her band Red Horse with John Gorka and Lucy Kaplansky. I got the courtesy of the press people at Red House Records. I've got the album. I've got Roses at the End of Time. Go see her tonight. Go get her album. It's terrific. And again, thank you, Eliza, for being here this week. Yay, you made it. So thrilled.
Hey, thank you for giving me a second chance to visit with you. I appreciate that.
You betcha. You betcha. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Take care, Dave. Bye-bye.